This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Tithe, a modern fairy tale by Holly Black, performed by Kate Rudd. For my little sister, Heidi. And pleasant is the fairyland, but an eerie tale to tell. I, at the end of 7 years, we pay a tithe to hell. I am safe fair and full of flesh. I'm feared it be my cell. Young Tam Lin. Prologue. And malt does more than Milton can to justify God's ways to man. A.E. Hausman. Terence, this is stupid stuff. Kay took another drag on her cigarette and dropped it into her mother's beer bottle. She figured that would be a good test for how drunk Ellen was. See if she would swallow a butt whole. They were up on stage still, Ellen and Lloyd and the rest of Stepping Razor. It had been a bad set, and watching them break down the equipment, she could see that they knew it. It didn't really matter. The sound system was loud and scratchy, and everyone had kept drinking and smoking and shouting, so she doubted the manager minded. There had even been a little dancing. The bartender leered at her again and offered her a drink on the house. Milk. Kay smirked, brushing back her ragged, blonde hair and pocketing a couple of matchbooks when his back was turned. Then her mother was next to her, taking a deep swallow of the beer before spitting it all over the counter. Kay couldn't help the wicked laughter that escaped her lips. Her mother looked at her in disbelief. "Go help load up the car," Ellen said, voice hoarse from singing. She was smoothing damp hair back from her face. Her lipstick was rubbed off the inside of her lips, but still clung to the edges of her mouth, smudged a little. She looked tired. Kay slid off the counter and leapt up onto the stage in one easy move. Lloyd glared at her as she started to pick up the stuff randomly, so she stuck to what was her mother's. His eyes were glazed. "Hey, kid, got any money on you?" Kay shrugged and took out a $10 bill. She had more, and he probably knew it. She'd come straight from Chow Fat's. Delivering Chinese food might pay crap, but it still paid better than being in a band. He took the money and ambled off to the bar, probably to get some beer to go. Kay picked up Ellen's stuff and started hauling it through the crowd. People mostly got out of her way. The cool autumn air outside the bar was a welcome relief, even stinking as it was with iron and exhaust fumes and the subways. The city always smelled like metal to Kay. It only took her a few minutes to get the car loaded up. She went back inside, intent on getting her mother in the car before someone smashed the window and stole the equipment. You couldn't leave anything in a car in Philly. The last time Ellen's car had been broken into, they'd done it for a secondhand coat and a bag of towels. The girl checking IDs at the door took a long look at her this time, but didn't say anything. It was late anyway, almost last call. Ellen was still at the bar, smoking a cigarette and drinking something stronger than beer. Lloyd was talking to a guy with long, dark hair. The man looked out of place in the bar, too well-dressed or something, but Lloyd had an arm slung over the man's shoulder. She caught a flash of the man's eyes. Cat yellow, reflecting in the dark bar. Kay shivered. But then, Kay saw odd things sometimes. She'd learned to ignore them. "Car's loaded," Kay told her mother. Ellen nodded, barely listening. "Can I have a cigarette, honey?" Kay fished the pack out of her army surplus satchel and took out two, handing one to her mother and lighting the other. Her mother bent close, the smell of whiskey and beer and sweat as familiar as any perfume to Kay. "Cigarette kiss," her mother said in that goofy way that was embarrassing and sweet at the same time, touching the tip of her cigarette to the red tip of Kay's and breathing in deeply. Two sucks of smoke and it flared to life. "Ready to go home?" Lloyd asked, and Kay almost jumped. It wasn't that she hadn't known he was there, it was the sound of his voice. It sounded velvety, a shade off of sleazy. not normal asshole Lloyd voice. Not at all. Ellen didn't seem to notice anything. She swallowed what was left of her drink. Sure. A moment later, Lloyd lifted his arm as though he were going to punch Ellen in the back. Kay reacted without thinking, shoving him. It was only his drunkenness that made her slight weight enough to push him off balance. She saw the knife as it clattered to the floor. Lloyd's face was completely blank, empty of any emotion at all. His eyes were wide and his pupils dilated. Frank, Stepping Razor's drummer, grabbed Lloyd's arm. Lloyd had just enough time to punch Frank in the face before other patrons tackled him and somebody called the police. By the time the cops got there, Lloyd couldn't remember anything. He was mad as hell, though, cursing Ellen at the top of his lungs. The police drove Kay and her mother to Lloyd's apartment and waited while Kay packed their clothes and stuff into plastic garbage bags. Ellen was on the phone, trying to find a place for them to crash. "Honey," Ellen said finally, "we're going to have to go to Grandma's." "Did you call her?" Kay asked, stacking her gray slick vinyl albums into an empty orange crate. They hadn't so much as visited once in the 6 years that they'd been gone from New Jersey. Ellen barely even spoke to her mother on the holidays before passing the phone to Kay. "Yeah, I just woke her up." Kay couldn't remember the last time her mother had sounded quite so tired. "It'll just be a little while. You can visit that friend of yours." "Janet?" Kay said. She hoped that was who Ellen meant. She hoped her mother wasn't teasing her about that fairy bullshit again. If she had to hear another story about Kay and her cute imaginary friends. "The one you email from the library. Get me another cigarette, okay, hon?" Ellen tossed a bunch of CDs into the crate. Kay picked up a leather jacket of Lloyd's she'd always liked and lit a cigarette for her mother off the stove burner. No sense in wasting matches. 1. Coercive as coma, frail as bloom, innuendos of your inverse dawn suffuse the self. Our every corpuscle become an elf. Mina Loy, moreover the moon. The Lost Lunar Baedeker. Kay spun down the worn, gray planks of the boardwalk. The air was heavy and stank of drying mussels and the crust of salt on the jetties. Waves tossed themselves against the shore, dragging grit and sand between their nails as they were slowly pulled back out to sea. The moon was high and pale in the sky, but the sun was just going down. It was so good to be able to breathe, Kay thought. She loved the serene brutality of the ocean, loved the electric power she felt with each breath of wet, briny air. She spun again, dizzily, not caring that her skirt was flying up over the tops of her black thigh-high stockings. "Come on!" Janet called. She stepped over the overflowing, leaf-choked gutter along the street parallel to the boardwalk, wobbling slightly on fat-heeled platform shoes. Her glitter makeup sparkled under the street lamps. Janet exhaled ghosts of blue smoke and took another drag on her cigarette. "You're going to fall!" Kay and her mother had been staying at her grandmother's a week already, and even though Ellen kept saying they'd be leaving soon, Kay knew they really had nowhere to go. Kay was glad. She loved the big old house caked with dust and mothballs. She liked the sea being so close and the air not stinging in her throat. The cheap hotels they passed were long closed and boarded up, their pools drained and cracked. Even the arcades were shut down, prizes in the claw machines still visible through the cloudy glass windows. Rust marks above an abandoned storefront outlined the words, "Saltwater Taffy." Janet dug through her tiny purse and pulled out a wand of strawberry lip gloss. Kay spun up to her, fake leopard coat flying open, a run already in her stocking. Her boots had sand stuck to them. "Let's go swimming," Kay said. She was giddy with night air, burning like the white-hot moon. Everything smelled wet and feral like it did before a thunderstorm, and she wanted to run, swift and eager, beyond the edge of what she could see. "The water's freezing," Janet said, sighing. "And your hair is fucked up, Kay. When we get there, you have to be cool. Don't seem so weird. Guys don't like weird. Kay paused and seemed to be listening intently, her upturned, coal-rimmed eyes watching Janet as warily as a cat's. What should I be like? It's not that I want you to be a certain way. Don't you want a boyfriend? Why bother with that? Let's find incubi. Incubi? Demons, plural, like octopi. And we're much more likely to find them. Her voice dropped conspiratorially. While swimming naked in the Atlantic a week before Halloween than practically anywhere else I can think of. Janet rolled her eyes. You know what the sun looks like? Kay asked. There was only a little more than a slice of red where the sea met the sky. No, what? Janet said, holding the lip gloss out to Kay. Like he slit his wrists in a bathtub and the blood is all over the water. That's gross, Kay. And the moon is just watching. She's just watching him die. She must have driven him to it. Kay! Kay spun again, laughing. Why are you always making shit up? That's what I mean by weird. Janet was speaking loudly, but Kay could barely hear her over the wind and the sound of her own laughter. Come on, Kay! Remember the fairies you used to tell stories about? What was his name? Which one? Spike or Gristle? Exactly. You made them up, Janet said. You always make things up. Kay stopped spinning, cocking her head to one side, fingers sliding into her pockets. I didn't say I didn't. The old merry-go-round building had been semi-abandoned for years. Angelic lead faces, surrounded by rays of hair, divided the broken panes. The entire front of it was windowed, revealing the dirt floor, glass glittering against the refuse. Inside, a crude plywood skateboarding ramp was the only remains of an attempt to use the building commercially in the last decade. Kay could hear voices echoing in the still air all the way out to the street. Janet dropped her cigarette into the gutter. It hissed and was quickly carried away, sitting on the water like a spider. Kay hoisted herself up onto the outside ledge and swung her legs over. The window had been long gone, but her legs scraped against the residue as she slid in, fraying her stockings further. Layers of paint thickly covered the once intricate moldings inside the carousel building. The ramp in the center of the room was tagged by local spray paint artists and covered with band stickers and ballpoint pen scrawlings. And there were the boys. Kay Fiersch! You remember me, right? Doughboy chuckled. He was short and thin, despite his name. I think you threw a bottle at my head in sixth grade. He laughed again. Right. I forgot that. You're not still mad. No, she said, but her blithe mood was gone, leaving her drained and anxious. Janet climbed on top of the skateboard ramp to where Kenny was sitting, a king in his silver flight jacket, watching the proceedings. Handsome, with dark hair and darker eyes. He held up a nearly full bottle of tequila in greeting. Marcus handed Kay the bottle he was drinking from, making a mock throwing motion as he did so. A little splashed on the sleeve of his flannel shirt. Bourbon, expensive shit. She forced a smile as she took it. Marcus resumed gutting a cigar. Even hunched over, he was a big guy. The brown skin on his head gleamed, and she could see where he must have nicked himself shaving it. I brought you some candy, Janet said to Kenny. She had candy corn and peanut chews. I brought you some candy, Doughboy mocked in a high, squeaky voice, jumping up on the ramp. Give it here, he said. Kay walked around the round room. It was magnificent, old and decayed and fine. The slow burn of bourbon in her throat was perfect for this place, the sort of thing a man in a summer suit who always wore a hat might drink. What flavor of Asian are you? Marcus asked. He had filled the cigar with weed and was chomping down on one end. The thick, sweet smell almost choked her. She took another swallow from the bottle and tried to ignore him. Kay, you hear me? I'm half Japanese. Kay touched her hair, blonde as her mother's. It was the hair that baffled people. Man, you ever see the cartoons there? They have them little girls with these pigtails and shit in these short school uniforms. We should have uniforms like that here, man. You ever wear one of those, huh? Shut up, dickhead, Janet said, laughing. She went to grade school with Doughboy and me. Kenny looped one finger through the belt rings of Janet's jeans and pulled her over to kiss her. Yeah, well, damn, Marcus laughed. Won't you hold up your hair in those pigtails for a second or something? Come on. Kay shook her head. No, she wouldn't. Marcus and Doughboy started to play hacky sack with an empty beer bottle. It didn't break as they kicked it boot to boot, but it made a hollow sound. She took another long sip of bourbon. Her head was already buzzing pleasantly, humming in time with imagined merry-go-round music. She moved farther back into the dim room, to where old placards announced popcorn and peanuts for 5 cents apiece. Against the far wall was a black, weathered door. It opened jerkily when she pushed it. Moonlight from the windows in the main room revealed only an office with an old desk and a corkboard with yellowed menus still pinned to it. She stepped inside, even though the light switch didn't work. Feeling in the blackness, she found a knob. This door led to a stairwell with only a little light drifting down from the top. She felt her way up the stairs. Dust covered the palms of her hands as she slid them along the railings. She sneezed loudly, then sneezed again. At the top was a small window lit brightly by the murderous moon, ripe and huge in the sky. Interesting boxes were stacked in the corners. Then her eyes fell on the horse, and she forgot all the rest. He was magnificent, gleaming pearl white and covered with tiny pieces of glued-down mirror. His face was painted with red and purple and gold, and he even had a bar of white teeth and a painted pink tongue with enough space to tuck a sugar cube. It was obvious why he'd been left behind. His legs on all four sides and part of his tail had been shattered. Splinters hung down from where his legs used to be. Gristle would have loved this. She had thought that many times since she had left the shore, 6 years past. My imaginary friends would have loved this. She'd thought it the first time that she'd seen the city, lit up like never-ending Christmas. But they never came when she was in Philadelphia. And now she was 16 and felt like she had no imagination left. She tried to set the horse up as if he were standing on his ruined stumps. It wobbled unsteadily but didn't fall. Kay pulled off her coat and dropped it on the dusty floor, setting the bourbon next to it. She swung one leg over the beast and dropped onto its saddle, using her feet to keep it from falling. She ran her hands down its mane, which was carved in golden ringlets. She touched the painted black eyes and the chipped ears. The white horse rose on unsteady legs in her mind. The long curls of the gold mane were cool in her hands, and the great bulk of the animal was real and warm beneath her. She wove her hands in the mane and gripped hard, slightly aware of a prickling feeling all through her limbs. The horse whinnied softly beneath her, ready to leap out into the cold, black water. She threw back her head. Kay? A soft voice snapped her out of her daydream. Kenny was standing near the stairs, regarding her blankly. For a moment, though, she was still fierce. Then she felt her cheeks burning. Caught in the half-light, she could see him better than she had downstairs. Two heavy silver hoops shone in the lobes of his ears. His short, cinnamon hair was mussed and had a slight wave to it, matching the beginnings of a goatee on his chin. Under the flight jacket, his too-tight white T-shirt showed the easy muscles of someone who was born with them. He moved toward her, reaching his hand out and then looking at it oddly, as though he didn't remember deciding to do that. Instead, he petted the head of the horse, slowly, almost hypnotically. "I saw you," he said. "I saw what you did." "Where's Janet?" Kay wasn't sure what he meant. She would have thought he was teasing her except for his serious face, his slow way of speaking. He was stroking the animal's mane now. "She was worried about you." His hand fascinated her despite herself. It seemed like he was tangling it in imaginary hair. "How did you make it do that?" "Do what?" She was afraid now, afraid and flattered both. There was no mocking or teasing in his face. He was watching her so intensely that he seemed drained of expression. "I saw it stand up." His voice was so low she could almost pretend that she didn't hear him right. His hand dropped to her thigh and slid upward to the cotton crotch of her panties. Even though she had seen the slow progression of his hand, the touch startled her. She was paralyzed for a moment before she sprang up, letting the horse fall as she did. It crashed down, knocking the bottle of bourbon over, dark liquor pouring over her coat and soaking the bottoms of the dusty boxes like the tide coming in at night. He grabbed for her before she could think, his hand catching hold of the neck of her shirt. She stepped back, off balance, and fell, her shirt ripping open over her bra even as he let go of it. Shoes pounded up the stairs. "What the fuck?" Marcus was at the top of the stairwell with Doughboy, trying to shove his way in for a look. Kenny shook his head and looked around numbly while Kay scrambled for her bourbon-soaked coat. The boys moved out of the way, and Janet was there too, staring. "What happened?" Janet asked, looking between them in confusion. Kay pushed past her, shoving her hand through an armhole of the coat as she threw it over her back.
"Kay!"
Janet called after her. Kay ignored her, taking the stairs two at a time in the dark. There was nothing she could say that would explain what had happened. She could hear Janet shouting,
"What did you do to her? What the fuck did you do?"
Kay ran across the carousel hall and swung her leg over the sill. The glass she had carefully avoided earlier slashed a thin line on the outside of her thigh as she dropped among the sandy soil and weeds. The cold wind felt good against her hot face. Cornelius Stone picked up the new box of computer crap and hauled it into his bedroom to drop next to the others. Each time his mother came home from the flea market with a cracked monitor, sticky keyboard, or just loads of wires, she had that hopeful look that made Corny want to hit her. She just couldn't comprehend the difference between a 286 and a quantum computer. She couldn't understand that the age of guerrilla engineering was at a close. That being a motherfucking genius wasn't enough. He needed to be a rich motherfucking genius. He dropped the box, kicked it hard 3 times, picked up his denim jacket with the devil's head on the back, and made for the door.
"Can you use that stuff, honey?"
His mother was in Janet's room, folding a new pair of secondhand jeans. She held up a t-shirt with rhinestone cats on it.
"Think your sister will like it?"
"Thanks, Ma," he said through gritted teeth. "I gotta get to work." He walked past the husband, who was stooped over getting a beer from the case under the kitchen table. The white cat was waddling along the countertop, its belly dragging with another pregnancy, screaming for canned food or pickles and ice cream or something. He petted its head grudgingly, but before it began rubbing against his hand in earnest, he opened the screen door and went out into the lot. The cool October air was a relief from the recirculated cigarette smoke. Corny loved his car. It was a primer-colored Chevy, blooming with rust spots and an inner lining that hung like baggy skin from the roof. He knew what he looked like. Beaky, skinny and tall, with bad hair and worse skin. He lived up to his name. Cornelius. Corny. Corndog. But not in his car. Inside, he was anonymous. Every day for the last 3 weeks, he had left a little earlier for work. He would go to the convenience store and buy some food. Then he would drive around, cruise past all the local rutting joints, imagining he had a semi-automatic rifle in the car and counting how many he could have gotten. "Pow," he'd say, softly, to rolled-up windows as a brown-haired boy with broad shoulders and a backwards baseball cap ran up to the giggling girls behind the window of a red truck. Pow. Pow. Tonight, he bought a cup of coffee and a package of black licorice. He lingered over a paperback with an embossed metallic dragon on the cover, reading the first few sentences, hoping something would interest him. The game was becoming boring. Worse than boring, it made him feel more pathetic than before. Nearly a week before Halloween and all, this was the point when a real maniac would go and get a gun. He sipped at the coffee and almost spat it out, too sweet. He sipped at it some more, steeling himself to the taste. Disgusting. Corny got out of his car and chucked the full coffee into the parking lot. It splashed satisfactorily on the asphalt. He went inside and poured himself another cup. From behind the counter, a matronly woman with frizzy red hair looked him over and pointed to his jacket. "Who are you supposed to be, the devil?" "I wish," Corny said, dropping $1.25 on the counter. "I wish." 2. The stones were sharp. The wind came at my back, walking along the highway, mincing like a cat. Theodore Rettke, Praise to the End. The wind whipped tiny pebbles of rain across Kay's face. The droplets froze her hands, making her shiver as they slid down her wet hair and under the collar of her coat. She walked, head down, kicking the scattered trash that had eddied up on the grassy shores along the highway. A flattened soda can skittered into a sodden, chrysanthemum-covered foam heart, staked there to mark the site of a car crash. There were no houses on this side of the road, just a long stretch of wet woods leading up to a gas station. She was over halfway home. Cars hissed over the asphalt. The sound was comforting, like a long sigh. "I saw you. I saw what you did." Awfulness twisted in her gut, awfulness and anger. She wanted to smash something, hit someone. How could she have done anything? When she tried to make a magazine page turn on its own or a penny land on heads, it never worked. How could she have made Kenny see a broken-legged carousel horse move? Never mind that she might as well assume that Spike and Lutie and Gristle had been imaginary. She'd been home for 2 weeks, and there was no sign of them. No matter how many times she had called them, no matter how many bowls of milk she left out, no matter how many times she went down to the old creek. She took a deep breath, snorting rain up her nose. It reminded her of crying. The trees seemed like flat lead panels missing the stained glass to fit between their branches. She knew what her grandmother was going to say when she got back, stinking of liquor with a torn shirt. True things. The same things that Janet would say tomorrow. There was no way to explain what had happened without admitting to something. His hand on her leg was what Janet would really care about. That, and that she had let it rest there, even if only for a moment. And she could imagine what he was telling Janet now, flushed, angry, and drunk. But even a badly managed lie would sound better than the truth. "I saw it stand up." But even if he didn't go that far, who would believe that he touched her crotch on purpose, but ripped her shirt by accident? No, he must have told an entirely different story. So what was Kay supposed to say when Janet asked what happened? Janet thought she was a liar already. She could still feel the heat of Kenny's hand, a stroke of fire along her thigh in contrast to her otherwise rain-soaked skin. Another gust of rain stung her cheeks, this one bringing a shout with it from the direction of the woods. The noise was brief, but eloquent with pain. Kay stopped abruptly. There was no sound except the rain, hissing like radio static. Then, just as a truck sped past, kicking up a cloud of drizzle, she heard another sound. Softer, this one. Maybe a moan bitten off at the end. It was just inside the copse of trees. Kay moved down the slight slope, off the short grass, and into the woods. She ducked under the dripping branches of an elm, stepping on tufts of short ferns and looping briars. Weeds brushed across her calves, leaving strokes of rain. The storm-bright sky lit the woods with silver. An earthy, sweet odor of rot bloomed where she disturbed the carpet of leaves. There was no one there. She half-turned toward the highway. She could still see the road from where she was standing. What was she doing? The sound must have carried over from the houses beyond the thin river that ran along the back of the woods. No one else would be dumb enough to go trooping through wet, dripping woods in the middle of the night. Kay walked back up to the road, picking her way through spots that looked somewhat drier than others. Burrs had collected along her stockings, and she bent down to pull them off.
Stay where you are.
She jumped at the voice. The accent was rich and strange, though the words were pronounced precisely. A man was sprawled in the mud only a few steps from her, clutching a curved sword in one hand. It shone like a sliver of moonlight in the hazy dark. Long pewter hair, plastered wetly to his neck, framed a face that was long and full of sharp angles. Rivulets of rain ran over the jointed black armor he wore. His other hand was at his heart, clutching a branch that jutted from his chest. The rain there was tinted pink with blood.
Was it you, girl?
He was breathing raggedly. Kay wasn't sure what he meant, but she shook her head. He didn't look much older than she was, certainly not old enough to call her girl.
So you haven't come to finish me off?
She shook her head again. He was long-limbed. He would be tall if he were standing, taller than most people, taller than any fairy she had ever seen. Still, she had no doubt that was what he was, if for no other reason than the pointed tops of his ears knifing through his wet hair, and that he was beautiful in a way that made her breath catch. He licked his lips. There was blood on them.
Pity,
he said quietly. She took a step toward him, and he twisted into a defensive crouch. Wounded as he was, he still moved swiftly. Hair fell forward across his face, but his eyes, shining like mercury, studied her intently.
You're a fairy, aren't you?
She said soothingly, holding her hands where he could see them. She had heard stories of the court fae, the gentry, from Lutilu, but she had never seen one. Maybe that was what he was. He stayed still, and she took another half step toward him, holding out one hand to coax him as if he were some fascinating, dangerous animal.
Let me help you.
His body was trembling with concentration. His eyes never flickered from her face. He held the hilt of his sword in a white-knuckled grip. She did not dare take another step.
You're going to bleed to death.
They stayed like that a few more minutes before he slumped down to one knee in the mud. He bent forward, fingers clutching the leaves, and spat red. The wet lashes over his half-closed eyes were as silver as a safety pin. She took two steps and knelt down next to him, bracing herself with shaking hands. This close, she could see that his armor was stiff leather sculpted to look like feathers.
I cannot draw the arrow myself, he said softly. They are waiting for me to bleed a little more before they come against my blade.
Who is waiting? It was hard to understand that someone had shot him with a tree branch, but that seemed to be what he was saying.
If you would help me draw this arrow.
His eyes narrowed, and he shook his head.
If not, then push it in as deep as you can, and hope that it kills me.
It will bleed more, Kay said. He laughed at that, a bitter sound.
Either way, no doubt.
She could see the despair in his face. He obviously believed her to be part of some plan to kill him. Still, he slid his body back until he could lean against the trunk of an oak. He was braced, waiting to see what she would do. She thought of the fairies she had known when she was a child. Impish, quick things. No mention of wars or magical arrows or enemies. Certainly no lies. No deception. The man bleeding in the dirt beside her told her how wrong her perceptions of fairy had been. Her fingers flinched away from the wound in his chest. Her lungs turned to ice as she looked at the grisly wound.
I can't do it.
His voice stayed soft.
What do they call you?
Kay, she said. There was silence for a moment as she noticed the cold cloud of her breath rise up with the word.
I'm Reuben.
Fairies didn't give their names easily, even part of their names, although she had no idea why. He was trying to show her that he trusted her, maybe trying to make up for the assumptions he had made about her.
Give me your hand.
She let him take her hand in his and guide it to the branch. His hand closed over hers, both of them chilled and wet, his fingers inhumanly long and rough with calluses.
Just close your hand on it and let me pull, he said. You don't even have to look. As long as I'm not touching it, I might be able to draw it out.
That shamed her. She had told him that she wanted to help him. He was in a whole lot of pain, and it was no time for her to be squeamish. I'll do it, she said. Reuben let go of her hand, and she gave a sharp tug. Although his face constricted with pain, the branch only pulled out a short way. Were there really other fairy folk in the trees, waiting for him to be weak enough to defeat? Kay thought that if so, now was a great time for them to come down and have a go at it.
Again, Kay.
She took note of the angle of the armor this time, changing her position so that the branch couldn't catch on one of the plates. She raised herself to one knee, braced, and then stood, pulling upward as hard as she could. Reuben gave a harsh cry as the branch slid free of his chest, its iron tip black with blood. His fingers touched the wound and he raised them, slick with blood, as if suddenly disbelieving that he had been shot.
Very brave, he said,
touching his wet fingers to her leg. Kay tossed the stick away from her. She was shuddering, and she could taste the ghost of blood in her mouth.
We have to stop the bleeding. How does your armor come off?
He seemed not to understand her at first. He just looked at her with a kind of incredulity. Then he leaned forward with a groan.
Straps,
he managed. She came and sat behind him, feeling over the smooth armor for buckles. A sudden wind shook the branches above, raining an extra shower of heavy droplets down on them, and Kay wondered again about fairies in the trees. Her fingers fumbled in her haste. If those fairies were still afraid of Reuben, they didn't have to worry for much longer. She was betting that it would only be a few more minutes before he passed out entirely. To get off his breastplate, she not only had to detach it from the backplate at his shoulders and sides, there were also straps that connected it to the shoulder plates and to his leg plates. Finally, she managed to peel it off his chest. Underneath, the bare skin was mottled with blood. He tipped back his head and closed his eyes.
Let the rain clean it.
She pulled off her coat and hung it on one of the branches of the tree. Her shirt was ripped already, she reminded herself as she took it off. She tore it into long strips and began winding them around Reuben's chest and arms. He opened his eyes when she touched him. His eyes narrowed, then widened. Their color was mesmerizing. He straightened up, horrified.
I didn't even hear you rip the cloth. You have to try to stay awake.
Kay's cheeks felt so warm that the cold rain actually felt good against them.
Is there somewhere you can go?
He shook his head. Fumbling near him, he picked up a leaf and wiped it against the underside of the leather breastplate. It came away shining red.
Drop this in the stream. There is a kelpie there. It is no sure thing that I will be able to control her in this weather, but it is something.
Kay nodded quickly, although she had no idea what a kelpie was, and made to take the leaf. He did not let it go immediately.
I am in your debt. I mislike not knowing how I must repay it.
I have questions. He let her take the leaf.
I will answer three, as full and well as is within my power.
She nodded. Like a fairy tale. Fine. It wasn't as if she had wanted anything from him anyway.
When you drop the leaf in the water, say, Reuben of the Unseelie Court asks for your aid.
Say to what?
Just say it aloud.
She nodded again and ran in the direction of the water. The steep bank of the stream was choked with vegetation and broken glass. Roots, swept bare of the mud that should have surrounded them, sat above the bank like overturned baskets, or ran along the ground like the pale arms of half-buried corpses. She forbade herself to think of that again. She squatted down and set the leaf, blood side down, into the water. It floated there, spinning a little. She wondered if it was too close to the bank, and tried to blow it farther out. "Reuben of the Unseelie Court asks for your help," she said, hoping that she had gotten it right. Nothing happened. She said it again, louder, feeling foolish and frightened at the same time. "Reuben of the Unseelie Court needs your help." A frog surfaced and began to swim in her direction. Would that have something to do with a kelpie? What kind of help were they supposed to get from a shallow, polluted stream? But then she saw that she had been mistaken. What she had taken for the eyes of a frog were actually hollow pits that quavered as something swam through the water toward her. She wanted to run, but fascination combined with obligation rooted her to the spot. Hollow pits formed into flaring nostrils on the snout of a black horse that rose up from the black water as if created from it. Moss and mud slid from its dripping flanks as the thing turned its head to regard Kay with luminous white eyes. She could not move. How many minutes passed as she stared at those mottled gray flanks, smooth as sealskin, and stared into the impossible glow of those eyes? The creature inclined its neck. Kay took a half step backward and tried to speak. No words came. The horse thing snuffled closer to her, its hooves sinking in the mud, snapping twigs. It smelled of brackish water. She took another careful step backward and stumbled. She had to say something. "This way," she managed finally, pointing through the trees. "He's this way." The horse moved in the direction she pointed, speeding up to a trot, and she was left to follow it, nearly shaking with relief. When she got to the clearing, Reuben was already straddling the creature's back. His breastplate had been haphazardly strapped on. She let out a breath she hadn't known she was holding. He saw her emerge from under the canopy of branches and smiled. His eyes seemed darker in the moonlight. "Were I you, I would stay clear of the folk in the future. We are a capricious people with little regard for mortals." She looked at him again. There were scratches on his armor that she didn't remember. Could he have been attacked? He could barely lift his head before. It was impossible to believe that he could have fought with someone. "Did something happen?" His smile deepened, wiping the weariness from his face. His eyes glittered. "Don't waste your questions." Then the horse rode, moving like no living thing, darting between trees with unearthly speed and grace. Leaves flurried from kicks of its hooves. Moonlight glowed along its flanks. Before she could think, she was alone in the wood. Alone and shivering and proud of herself. She moved to retrieve her coat, and a glimmer of light caught her eye. The arrow. She knelt and picked up the branch with its iron tip. Her finger ran up the rough bark and touched the too warm metal. A shudder went through her, and she dropped it back in the mud. The woods were suddenly menacing, and she walked as quickly as she could back toward the road. If she started running, she didn't think she'd be able to stop. Kay dug her feet into the muddy slope that marked the edge of her grandmother's lawn and heaved herself up. She slid past the overflowing trash can, the broken-down pinto, the rusted coffee cans wired together as a fence for a wilted herb garden. All the lights in the house seemed to be on, highlighting the grubby curtains. Blue lights flickered in the living room where the TV was. She opened the back door and walked into the kitchen. Pots and pans, crusted with food, were piled in the sink. She was supposed to have washed them. Instead, she went to the cupboard and took out a bowl, filled it with milk, then put a piece of stale white bread on top of it. It would have to do, she thought as she carefully opened the door and set it on the step. After all, the only things likely to come for it anymore were neighborhood cats. Kay crept into the living room. On the other side of the staircase, Ellen was sitting in front of the television, eating one of the miniature Snickers Grandma had bought for the trick-or-treaters. "Leave me the fuck alone," she muttered to the drink in front of her. "You think I don't know anything. Okay, you're the smart one, right?" Kay's grandmother said in that too-sweet voice that pissed off Kay so much. "If you're so smart, then how come you're all alone? How come all these men just use you and leave you? How come the only one to take you in is your old stupid mother?" "I heard you the first million fucking times you said it." "Well, you're going to hear it again," Kay's grandmother said. "Where is your daughter tonight? It's almost 1 in the morning. Do you even care that she's out gallivanting around who knows where, trying her damnedest to turn out just like, don't you start in on my daughter?" Kay's mother said with surprising vehemence. "She's just fine. You leave her out of your bitching." Kay bent her head down and tried to walk up the stairs as quickly and quietly as she could. She caught her own reflection in the hallway mirror, mascara and glitter eyeshadow smeared across her cheeks and under her eyes, running encrusted and glittering streaks that looked like they were made by tears. Her lipstick was smudged and dull, arching across her left cheek where she must have wiped it. Kay turned to take a furtive look into the living room. Her mother caught her glance, rolled her eyes, and motioned her up the stairs with a furtive hand movement. "While she's in this house, she's going to live by the same rules that you lived by. I don't care that she's spent the last 6 years in a rat-infested apartment with whatever hoodlums you took up with. From now on, that girl's going to be raised decent." Kay crept the rest of the way up the stairs and into her room. She closed the door as quietly as she could. The tiny white dresser and too short bed seemed to belong to someone else. Her rats, Isaac and Armageddon, rustled in their fish tank on top of the old toy box. Kay stripped off her clothes and, not caring about the wet or the mud or anything, climbed into the small bed, wrapped a blanket around herself, and folded her legs so that she fit. Kay knew what obsession was like. She saw how her mother craved fame, pined over men who treated her like shit. She didn't want to want someone she would never have. But just for tonight, she allowed herself to think of him. To think of the solemn, formal way he had spoken to her, so unlike anyone else. She let herself think of his flashing eyes and crooked smile. Kay slid down into sleep like water closing over her head. 3. A cigarette is the perfect type of perfect pleasure. It is exquisite, and it leaves one unsatisfied. What more can one want? Oscar Wilde, The Picture of Dorian Gray. Kay was standing in a little stream, clutching a Barbie doll by its blonde hair, the cool water tickling her toes. Heat beat down on her back, and she could smell green things and the rich mud of summer. She was 9. It made perfect dream sense, even though she knew that it hadn't happened quite this way. The warm green memory was younger than 9. But in this patchwork dream, Spike sat on the carpet of moss that ran along the bank. He was sewing a doll's dress and purse out of leaves. Lutie straddled the waist of a sitting Ken doll, her iridescent butterfly wings fluttering slightly while she sang bawdy songs that made 9-year-old Kay giggle and blush at the same time. "I could pretend that he could bend, but I'm bound to be sad when he is unclad. A smooth plastic chest doesn't make up for the rest. Even a boy doll has to try to make a girl doll sigh." Gristle stood silently beside Kay. Laughing, she turned to him, and he made to speak, but the only thing that dropped from his mouth was a single white stone. It splashed into the stream, settling along the bottom, along with the other rocks, shining with a strange light.
A shiny plastic boy is not a proper toy. Each and every girl's got a pearl.
A squawk made Kay look up suddenly. A crow had settled in the tree, black feathers shimmering with color, like gasoline floating on the surface of water. When the crow cocked its head down at her, its eyes were as pale as the stone.
Never mind that you can't find the thing. He can't even find his ding.
The crow shifted its claws along the branch, then dropped into the air. A moment later, she felt the scrape of claws along her wrist and the bite of its beak on her hand as her doll was pulled into the air. Kay screamed with a shrill, childish hysteria and reached down to throw something at the bird. Her hand closed on a stone, and she hurled it without thinking. The crow spiraled into the cushion of trees, and Kay ran toward it. The forest around her blurred, and she was suddenly looking down at the black shape. It was still, feathers ruffling slightly in the breeze. Her doll was there, too, lying apart from the dead bird, and between them was a smooth white stone, the stone that Gristle had spoken. And then she woke up. Kay's mother was standing in the doorway of the bedroom holding a cordless phone.
I've been calling and calling you from downstairs. Janet's on the phone.
What?
Kay blinked through eyes crusty with day-old makeup. She stretched her legs out, and her feet kicked the footboard of the tiny bed. The sun was alive again, glowing with fury at the night's trickery at the hands of Mistress Moon. Flares of lemony light threatened her with a headache if she opened her eyes.
Rough night.
Kay's mother leaned against the doorframe and took a drag on her cigarette. Kay rubbed her eyes. Her knuckles came away black and glittery.
Janet's on the phone.
Kay's mother sounded both annoyed and amused at having to repeat herself.
You want me to tell her that you'll call her back?
Kay shook her head and took the phone.
Hello?
Her voice was rough, thick with phlegm. Ellen left the doorway, and Kay heard her thump down the stairs.
What happened last night?
It took Kay a few moments to understand what Janet was asking.
Oh, nothing. Kenny tried to catch me, and my shirt ripped.
Kay! How come you ran out like that? I thought he'd done something terrible to you. We were fighting all night about it.
I didn't think you'd believe me, Kay said flatly.
That must have sounded enough like best friend contrition, because Janet's tone softened.
Come on, Kay. Of course I believe you.
Kay struggled for what to say to the unexpected reprieve.
Are you okay?
Janet asked.
I met someone on the way home last night.
Kay sat up in bed, realizing that she'd gone to bed with her bra, skirt, and stockings still on. No wonder she felt uncomfortable.
You did?
Janet sounded surprised and almost skeptical.
A boy?
Yeah,
Kay said. She wanted to say it aloud, to hold on to it. Already her recollection of Reuben was blanched by the sun, the way a dream fades when you don't write it down.
He had gray eyes and long hair.
Like a metalhead?
Longer,
Kay said. She wrapped the puke pink comforter more tightly around her. Like everything else in her bedroom, it was slightly too small.
Weird. What's his name?
Robin, Kay said, a little smile on her face. She was glad Janet couldn't see her right now. She was sure she looked idiotically happy.
Like Robin Hood? Are you for real? Did he hit on you?
We just talked, Kay said.
Janet sighed.
You didn't meet anyone, did you? You're making this up.
He's real, Kay said.
He was real. The most real person she had met in a long time. Hyper-real.
The party sucked anyway, Janet said. I almost kicked this girl's ass. Doe kept telling me to chill, but I was too wasted and upset. Well, come over, and I'll tell you the rest.
Sure, okay. I've got to get dressed.
Okay, bye.
The phone clicked as Janet hung up. Kay turned it off and dropped it on the comforter. Kay looked around her bedroom. Her clothes lay in drifts on the floor,
most still in the black garbage bags. All the furniture was the same as it had been when she was 4. Child-size white furniture, pink walls, and a reproachful, glass-eyed army of dolls arranged in the bookshelves. I have to find Gristle and Spike. She hadn't ever needed to call them before. They'd always been around when she had needed them. But that was when she had been little, when she had believed in everything, before her legs stuck out over the end of the bed and she had to bend over to see her face in the dresser mirror. Kay sighed. She guessed that she wasn't really unicorn pure anymore. Maybe that kind of thing mattered. Kay stripped out of her clothes and found a worn pair of jeans and a blue G-Force t-shirt. In the bathroom, as she splashed cold water on her face and rubbed off last night's makeup, she inspected herself. The purple dye she'd combed into her hair was already faded. She stared at her upturned eyes and thin cheeks. For the first time, she wondered where they had really come from. She hadn't seen Reuben well in the moonlight, but his upturned eyes could have gotten him mistaken for Asian if he hadn't had such an